grad student. Welcome to the annual Martin Luther King Jr. Day episode. If you haven't heard last year's episode with Brianna Baker, I highly recommend that you give that a listen. If not before, then definitely after this episode. It isn't the prequel, but we really dive into the heart of social justice in academia. We break down some of the history of racism, and we even discuss more about the Black In movements. You can find the episode at deargradstudent.com/episodes/21, or look for episode 21 on your favorite podcast app, and I will include it as a link in today's episode description. Also, if you didn't know, I was a guest on another podcast last week, and I'm going to be a guest on an episode dropping this Saturday for a different podcast. Last week, I was lucky enough to be a guest on Planthropology, which is hosted by Vikram Baliga, who many of you know from my intros once a month because he is a longtime patron of this podcast. Vikram and I talk about me, my research, and my recent love for running outdoors. I am on episode 68 of Planthropology, which again, you can find on your favorite podcast app, but I will also link below for easy access. Now, coming this Saturday, I was a guest on PhD Balance's Grad Chat. I was so excited when they reached out to collab, and I really cannot wait for this one to go live. Be sure that you are subscribed to Planthropology and Grad Chat on your favorite podcast apps so that you're notified when new episodes go live. All right, I've already taken up too much time in the intro. Let's jump into today's episode. Today's episode is all about Black student mental health with fourth-year PhD candidate Zori Paul, fourth-year PhD candidate Tanisha Johnson, and returning guest from last year, second-year PhD student Brianna Baker. Hello, listeners. Welcome back to your favorite grad school podcast, Dear Grad Student, the podcast where grad students can come together to celebrate, commiserate, and support one another through this long and difficult journey. I'm Alana. I'm a fifth-year PhD candidate and your host, and I'm joined today by a fourth-year PhD candidate studying the intersection of multiple marginalized identities and cross-cultural mentorship, Zori Paul, a fourth-year PhD candidate studying racial discrimination and socioeconomic status broadly and their impact on mental health, Tanisha Johnson, and a returning guest from episode 21, a second-year PhD student studying socio-political determinants of mental health, intersectionality, and collectivism surrounding Black mental health, Brianna Baker. Welcome, everyone, to the podcast.
Hi, everyone.
Hello, folks.
Hi.
I just did that in one go, and I'm honestly, like, not okay.
Good job.
Thank you so much. Awesome. That was my peak. For everyone listening, it's all downhill from here. I will never be as good as that ever again. Well, why don't we go ahead and start by shouting you all out on social media. I know I've met all of you from social media. You're very active on Twitter, so most people listening probably know who all of you are, but just in case they don't, where can folks find you online on Twitter or Instagram or a website, and whoever wants to go first?
I can go, folks. Oh.
Go ahead, sorry.
Fight about it. I'm just kidding.
Hi, folks. My name is Zori Paul. You can find me on Twitter at Zori Amber, so Z as in zebra, O-R-I-A-M-B-E-R, or on Instagram as Amber Insights, all one word. And you can also find me on YouTube as Amber Insights as well.
Awesome. Tanisha, do you want to go next?
Yeah. Hi, everyone. I'm Tanisha. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at T.Renee. So T-D-O-T-R-E-N-A-E. And you can also find me on YouTube at Renee's Corner, and coming soon, a website eventually, one day.
At, interwebs.
Yeah, it's very weird.
And Brie, yeah. Welcome back.
Yeah, happy to be here again. You all can find me on Twitter at Brianna A. Baker. So that's B-R-I-A-N-N-A-A-B-A-K-E-R. Or my website at the same name, www.briannaabaker.com. Or on YouTube at Becoming Dr. Baker.
You know what's so funny is that I individually knew that all of you had YouTube channels, but I didn't actually realize until we're all sitting here that all of you are YouTubers, and I'm like really into that.
Yeah,
I've been on a long break.
Me too.
A very long hiatus. Yeah.
Brie, when we did our last recording, did I ever tell you that I used to be a YouTuber?
I think you did. Yeah. I vaguely remember this.
RIP. That channel is privated, but there's like 150 videos from like eighth grade, ninth grade of like, they're all music videos and like skits I did with my family. And they have like thousands of views, but I like took all of them down when I applied to grad school. I was like, this will never see the light of day. And they're, you know what?
I love it.
Every time I get drunk with friends, it comes up because only I can access them through my account because of how privated they are. So they'll like take my phone and just start like, they'll know things by heart and they'll just like start doing the skits. It's like a whole thing. Maybe when we're done recording, I'll be like, here's a sneak peek at that's me. And suddenly all of this will make more sense. Well, I like to start every episode out by putting my guests in context so that people just know a little bit more about them. And I think that if I'm going to preach about people being more than just whatever they're coming on to talk about in this episode or more than just grad students, that I back that up by letting people do that. So, Brie, do you want to go first? Tell us a little bit about who you are, your academic interests, and all of that.
Oh my goodness, I definitely should have prepared this part. Of
so
course
sorry.
I didn't.
surprise, we're going to do some introductions, folks.
No, well, I am a second year at Teachers College, Columbia University, studying counseling psychology. So really into using multiculturalism, exploring intersectionality and clinical and research settings. So that's very, very broad about me. On a more fun note, like I recently started running, which Alana knows, yes. Based on our Strava profile.
That's right.
So I have just finished a run and I'm so tired right now. But that's what I've been doing kind of is my self-care, which I know we'll talk about a little bit later. Don't know what else to say about myself, but
I think
also YouTube.
And
yeah, that's about it.
I do have a question about running for you.
Sure.
Is this like a new thing for you?
It's on and off. You know, I never considered myself a runner because I could probably run maybe about three and a half minutes without having to stop. And okay, then like, it became something.
Here's why I asked you this question, because I feel very similarly about like my running journey, right? Where like I was very on and off, and only over the last two or so months when I've like started taking it seriously for mental health purposes, have I been able to run like 2 or 3 miles straight.
Yeah.
Okay. But like my mile times, it's like a 13-minute mile, and I'm like, I've made it, I ran it. And you're like, oh, man, I really wanted to hit a 7-minute mile today. And I'm like, what the fuck? Like, how are you just like, oh, I'm like an on and off runner, but like, I run so fast. Okay. It's rude.
Okay, so context. I did track in high school.
Oh, I feel better.
And I would always get made fun of because I wanted to be a sprinter really, really badly, but I could never get my speed up in time. And so by the time like the 100-meter or like whatever was done, I was like never out of breath. I was like, oh man, I was just getting into it. Darn it.
Oh.
And so everyone was like, you need to run longer. So then I would try, but again, I couldn't run a mile because that was way too long.
Way too long.
So I just kind of figured I'm just this weird halfway fit person who probably can never run. And then, like you said, the past like 6 months probably has really gotten me into it.
Oh my gosh. Well, I feel like it probably doesn't hurt to live in New York because you have really interesting things to like run around. And I go to the same park every single day. You know, I think about this a lot and we'll get off this in a second. Just like because I go to the same park at the same time every day, I'm like, I am in danger every time I go at this point. Someone's going to know.
That, start like, a horror movie.
Very literally, like every once in a while, I'm like, I'm going to run in the opposite direction and then they won't know. But it like doesn't work like that. But I like think about that. So I don't have as many interesting things to look at. I'm glad that you are on this like running journey. I feel like we're doing it together.
I know, I do too.
Which is like so nice. Zori, do you want to go next and just tell me a little bit about yourself, maybe a little bit about your research and give us some context for who you are?
Yeah, so I'm Zori Paul. As I said before, I'm a fourth year doctoral candidate in counselor education. I really like to emphasize that because everyone keeps calling me a psychologist. I'm like, no, technically not. There's a lot of overlap between psychologists and counselors, but, you know, trying to be ethical and not get in trouble.
We do our best. We do our best.
I know. I'm just like, let's just all be friends. Yes. But anyway, as you said, I study multiple marginalized identities, specifically bisexual plus women of color. That's what I'm doing my dissertation on. I don't run unless
okay.
you count. Unless you count metaphorically running away from my dissertation writing.
Yeah, I do count that, actually.
But that's where a lot of my independent research focuses on. But I do a lot of group research focusing on mentorship, cross-cultural mentorship, rupture and repair, working on a research study right now, trying to get through IRB stuff with that, but hopefully I'll be coming out soon about rupture and repair and counseling programs and how we can hopefully fix that. Because surprisingly, even though it's like one of those things that people are just like, yes, you need mentorship. Mentorship is so important. There's like very little research or resources on not only what does good mentorship look like, but like when you have those mistakes, those miscommunications, how can you repair them? Mm. So I think that's super important as not only someone in academia, but also a woman of color, a person with multiple marginalized identities myself. I think that's so important to look at and focus on. So that's like me academically. I've been trying to think of something cool that I do outside of academics.
That's okay.
I want to like fall back on my like, oh, I used to know how to beatbox on the flute, but like that's so old.
I gotta be honest, I don't care how old that is. Like, that's still cool.
So yeah, that's like my cool little thing.
I love it.
I've been baking kind of a little bit.
I can't bake.
And then with Tanisha and some other of our like friends that we met on Twitter, we've been watching movies. So I'm an expert binge watcher too.
Wait, am I thinking, is this you who's always live tweeting the shows that you're watching?
Probably.
Okay. I think you ruined this season of Great British Baking Show for me because I think that you would be tweeting it live and I'd be like, I can't watch it till tomorrow. I can't watch it till tomorrow. And I have to like go off Twitter.
No, it would come on Friday on Netflix.
Yes.
And we wouldn't tweet about it until Saturday. So I gave you
right.
some time.
Listen, you did the best you could. It's me, not you. And yet here I was going off of Twitter. And I was like, you know, maybe this is good for me. Like, maybe it's good to get off Twitter. I do have a question about your research that you mentioned. Mm-hmm. You said it's called rupture and repair. So it's like concept that you're yes. talking about. So is that in like a clinical context, like a clinical supervisor and a mentee? Or is that like a professional, like my PhD advisor and me? Or would that be like client and therapist? Or is it like all of the above? Sorry, there's so many questions.
No, it's a great question. So we took the term rupture and repair because that comes from the relationship between a counselor and their client. So that's initially where we took the idea because right. we're thinking like these are all terms that people in the counseling field, even people in other mental health fields know sure. rupture and repair.
Right.
So we just took that from like the client room session to more academia focus, just to have some baseline of understanding that everyone understands. Because like I said before, such an important thing,
yeah.
very little data research on it. And we looked across like multiple fields, not wow. just in counseling. We looked in psychology, social work, nursing, and very little. So.
And I think that that's so surprising because when we think about these relationships with boundaries, right, like whether it's client and therapist, whether it's mentor-mentee, they have these like weird defined boundaries. And I think that because of that, everyone has different roles. And I think that it's so interesting that you're like, not a lot of people are talking about this because relationships like that have a lot of breakdowns. I don't mean to say that in a bad way, but like when a relationship breaks down with your therapist, like that's always kind of a big deal. And it's the same with a supervisor. Like when that relationship breaks mm-hmm. down and you have to repair it, that's a big deal. And it's a personal thing, which kind of makes me wonder if that's why people are taking their own path, deciding they're right, and no one's researching it because it's so messy. But I'm glad that someone's looking at it because it is messy. And I just think it's interesting, like that parallel of those both being boundary type relationships that like it would yeah. translate from like the client room to like a supervisor position.
Yeah, definitely.
Very cool. So Tanisha, it's your turn. Tell me a little bit about you. Tell me a little bit about your research and like, okay, no pressure for a fun thing. You don't have to give a fun thing, but if you have a fun thing, I'm ready to hear it and absorb it.
That's funny. Okay, so hi, I'm Tanisha. I am a fourth year at St. Louis University in St. Louis, Missouri.
Oh, you go to SLU.
I do go to SLU.
Oh, one of my best friends in my program got her undergrad at SLU.
Yeah, it's really, I really like it. It's a neat place to be. And I study clinical psychology. My research interests are broadly in racial discrimination and socioeconomic status and how those things impact mental health, both like positive mental health and negative mental health outcomes. For my dissertation, I'm looking at that relationship in Black teenagers, specifically Black teenagers from like mid income to upper income Black teenagers, because there is zero research about these kids, zero research about Black people who are affluent in general. And so that's where I'm going with my research. I'm also really interested in Black people's psychological well-being in general. I think it's something that's under research. We spend a lot of time talking about Black folks in poverty, Black folks and their struggles. And so I really am looking for more of that like positive mental health arena. And that's really what's driving me now. Outside of academia, I do some consulting on the side with diversity, equity, and inclusion things. So like taking research outside of academia, which I had no idea people did before. And I'm super into it. Love it. That has been really fun to learn how to do. I guess fun things. I'm a YouTuber. I have a dog. I love anime. I'm super into anime and Marvel and all things nerdy, basically. I probably have an interest in it if it's nerdy. So
I'm the same way with nerdy things. I never got super into anime. It was like one of those things that I felt like I was like peripheral to. Like I was like one step away from anime at like every step of my nerd journey, and I just like never took the dive. But I was really into like Howl's Moving Castle and like that whole studio's works growing up. Mm-hmm. Like I said, I was so peripheral. I mean, it was like I had the gateway drug and I just like never took it further.
You can still take the drug, it's right there.
So one of my best friends is like so into anime that she actually went back for her bachelor's degree in animation and like illustration so that she could do like comic books and different things like that. Yeah, so legit. I was like so impressed. And anime is what drove her. But she, like, when she was last at my apartment, signed in to her whole, like, is it Funimation? It's like whatever mm-hmm. the login is for like streaming anime. She's like, here's my account. I'm logging you in. Here are the shows you need to watch in this order. These are the good ones, blah, 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 to like try to get me into it. And I hope she's not listening because I still haven't, but I have access and I'm going to. I just haven't, but I'm going to. She wants me to watch. The first one she wants me to watch is Fruits Basket.
Classic. Mm-hmm.
That's what
classic.
She said.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
Wait, the new one or the old one too?
The old That's one.
Okay. Yeah.
She's like, there's so much trauma. You would love it. And I'm like, I don't know what that says about me, but thank you. That's probably true though. So, but yes. So the second you said nerdy stuff, I was like, yeah, I need to talk about my anime journey, which I feel like is existent in that it's not existent in that I should have, I don't know. I'm like, maybe I will.
You're so close. I was like really nerdy in middle school. And then I realized that people don't really like nerdy things in high school. So I stopped. Okay. And then I went back once I got to college because I was like, well, I really love nerdy stuff. So let's go back. And so I kind of like rejoined the nerdyhood, I guess, of things. Yeah, I just like spent a period of my life was like hiding me watching anime. Like I was watching Naruto and only like two other people knew. And then it was like a whole secret society. Like people knew, like if you knew that other people were nerdy, you could talk about it, but like nobody else could know. And it was it was so dramatic for no reason.
Yeah, the first rule of nerddom is you don't talk about nerddom.
Yeah,
but now it's
so dramatic.
Cool.
Yeah.
And we're all coming out of the cracks and the crevices and we're all like, I'm alive. Yeah, it's a whole thing.
Yes.
Well, why don't we go ahead and jump into today's episode? So, you know, as most listeners know, I've already mentioned it. I did have Brianna on the podcast last year for MLK Day. We talked all about using academia as a medium for social justice. If you have not heard that episode, you are seriously missing out. You can find it at deargradstudent.com/episodes/21, and it will be linked in the description. And I think, as I mentioned on Twitter this week or told you, it's actually one of my most listened to episodes. It is right up there in the, I think it's in the almost in the 1000s club and we're just like right on the cusp of being in that. So awesome. Thanks for being there. Thanks for joining me again. And for that reason and so many more, I am so happy to have you back and to have Zori and Tanisha from Black and Mental Health on to discuss Black mental health for today's episode, especially as it relates to grad school. So first off, I want to say thank you all for speaking on this topic and for bringing your lived experience to this podcast. Obviously, it's nothing that I could ever speak to, but even more so, I've had a couple of different episodes on people's experience being Black in grad school. And I've had so many people reach out just to say, like, thank you. Like, there aren't a lot of people talking about this. There is another podcast that is about being Black in grad school. So I think I'm going to link that in the description below. I just think that this could be and should be in more places. So thank all of you for joining me to bring that to the Dear Grad Student space. I really appreciate it. Why don't we start by talking about some of the unique experiences of mental health for Black students and sort of, you know, in other words, why have this episode? Like, why is this something that should be a topic of conversation?
I mean, something that I hope people know is that higher education in general, historically, was not created for people of color, women, people from low socioeconomic backgrounds, probably forgetting something else. But because of that, the systems of higher education, of grad school, can create a lot of struggles, both systemically, both like on an individual level, conscious, unconscious. You know, sorry, I'm psychodynamic, so always unconscious.
No, oh my God.
Conscious, unconscious.
Bring it in. I love it. Let's get deep.
But yeah, because of that, it already feels like there's a lot of things already against students from marginalized backgrounds. Speaking for myself, I think it's so important to have these type of conversations. One, to bring attention to it, to also help others who may be the only one in their program understand, like, no, this is not you. There are other people who are experiencing these things. You're not crazy. You're not weird. You're not doing bad. You know, basically that imposter syndrome thing that comes up, which again, even imposter syndrome is systemic based. It has nothing, or at least I view it, it has nothing to do with the person on an individual level and has to do with everything around the environment, the systems around that person. I think that's why it's really important to have these type of conversations. It may feel like we're a broken record, but until the system changes, until things change and people feel like they don't have to hide parts of themselves, bring it back to like what Tanisha was saying, we need to keep having these conversations. We need to keep hitting people over the head with these kind of conversations.
You know, I think it's really interesting that you said, you know, like, oh, sorry if we sound like a broken record, because I think that that speaks to how much people are talking about it. But it's interesting when you said that, that I was like, actually, I wonder if people listening to this episode are hearing this for the first or second time. And I think that that imbalance of you maybe feeling like a broken record about some of the points we're going to talk about versus some people listening being like, oh, I haven't heard about this in a few months. Oh, I haven't heard about this in, you know, X whatever time. That imbalance is something that I just want to point out, especially if you're somebody listening feeling like this is the first time you've heard this in a couple of months or the first time you've ever heard this, that people are talking about this. And I would encourage that if you are wondering why Zori was like, broken record, maybe you should be following some different accounts online or searching different terms or paying a little bit more attention so that the algorithms are directing you different ways, because there are a lot of people talking about this. And so I just wanted to point that out because I don't know that people will find that you sound like a broken record, which I think is also part of the problem, but I'm not going to get that meta about, you know, perceptions and such.
Yeah. I also just want to add, like, I think for me, like, had an episode like this come out, had people been talking about Black mental health in grad schools when I first started, I think that would have saved me a lot of heartache and saved me a lot of, like, you know, feeling like I was so alone here. So in my cohort, there's a Black man in the program and me. And so we were both like, are we just like not getting this? Like, why is it that we're having such a hard time in grad school? And like, why is it that this is only our experience? And like, there weren't any other, like, I don't want to say like mentors, but there wasn't a source for me to go to be like, here are what other people across the country are experiencing while being Black in grad school and their mental health. And like, seeing it would have, I guess, I think would made me feel like, okay, like, I'm not tripping. This isn't, you know, a Tanisha thing. This isn't a SLU thing. This isn't right here. This is a whole sort of system thing, like Zori was talking about. And I think that talking about it also gives people the freedom to experience it and not feel like they have to hide it and not feel like there's shame wrapped up in it. Because I felt a lot of shame my first year because I was like, I'm not doing this grad school thing right. Like, people are out here having a great time and I'm like crying every day. Like, this is not cool. And so I wish that there had been somebody to say these things or like talk about it and for me to hear it and feel okay with it and like be like, okay, I don't have to hold on to this shame. This shame isn't mine. It's what Zori was saying. Like, these systems weren't built for me to be here in the first place. And so no wonder there's shame. No wonder I'm feeling like I don't belong here. I feel like I'm not measuring up to my peers, is because like I wasn't even supposed to be here in the first place. And so I think had I had that conversation my first year, or had I heard somebody talk about it my first year, it would have made like a world of difference.
Yeah. And I think you speak exactly to what people have mentioned to me, you know, putting out other episodes around these topics, and why I'm like, I also want to make sure that I'm elevating more voices on this, because there are lots and lots of people in their first year, or especially right now, about to interview, or who are accepting offers right now, who are going to be diving into this. And I think the tough thing is that some programs are more set up than others, I have to imagine. Like, even if there are places where there are more students of color or more Black students or even a Black advisor who, like, they can turn to, these problems that we're going to talk about today, I guess my assumption would be that that still exists there. So additional support can help a ton, but it sounds like this would be an experience to somehow prepare for, or somehow just like be aware of, knowing, I love that line you said, like, it's not my shame to like hang on to, like, you didn't do anything wrong that like led to what's going down. So I just thought that was a really interesting way to put it. And I don't know, I just really liked that.
Yeah. I mean, I can definitely relate to what both of you have just said, especially being so like early in my career as well as a graduate student. I feel like you all are like, I know we talked about like nerdyism. I feel like you're talking about like this Black grad student identity development model that really does happen, where you're like first starting out. And I just had such a different idea of what it would feel and look like to be in graduate school. Like, Tanisha, like what you were saying, like, I thought I was going to thrive like everybody else is. Like, everybody's doing all these things. It looks so easy. Like, that wasn't the case at all. I think I did cry on my first day as well. I was just so overwhelmed. And I think that speaking about like Black graduate student mental health specifically, like, there's so much pressure added. Like, there's the imposter phenomenon, but there's also this added pressure that I really struggle with, of like, I need to be the one that's like holding my community on my back. Like, I'm the one that's supposed to be like this healing agent, this liberator. Like, I'm going to do all this stuff. And that's a lot of responsibility to take on one person. And unfortunately, when you are the only one in your program, like when I came in, I was the only Black student. There were no Black faculty. Like, and it's just a lot to hold on to and a lot to bear. So I was just going to say, like, yeah, Zori, thanks for bringing up like the systemic barriers as well. Cause I think there's a lot of like psychosocial barriers that Black graduate students face that are systemic and also personal, but like in training, lack of research opportunities, lack of mentors, funding, all these huge challenges that nobody wants to talk about, but like can have such a big influence on mental health for Black graduate students.
Well, and I really like that you have wrapped all of this together, and you've actually made me think as well about some of the transformation that we're seeing. And let me put that in quotes, transformation, because a lot of places are, for, you know, they've put together DEI committees that are now in their second year, or they're incorporating different diversity things during interview weekend and blah, blah. And like, that is fine and good to like put those together. And a lot of them are doing great work, but like that work is like, who's running those works? Like, in a lot of ways, it is either, in my personal opinion, white people running them who shouldn't be running them, or people of color running them who do not need another responsibility to be helping white people along anymore. Like you talked about, like, you feel like you have the weight of your community on your back. And it's like, when a DEI committee comes up, I have heard other like friends of mine who are Black students who are like, well, yeah, I'm going to volunteer for that because it's directly affecting me. But another white student might not feel that obligation or care. And so it's like, sure, it might be something that helps in the long run, but A, I probably won't reap those benefits. And B, it just puts more work on you. That takes you away from research, that takes you out of, you know, whatever. And that serves as a reminder that like, this only exists because I shouldn't be here. Even if good things are also coming, like, I really don't mean to knock the work of DEI committees. Like, again, some of them are doing fantastic things. I've seen people post on Twitter about that, but it comes with cost as well. And I think that that cost, seeing it from the outside, like, kind of makes me angry. I don't know if that's the right way that I should feel. And I know I shouldn't judge emotions. I know we're all therapist counselors here. I'm not judging my emotion. I just mean, like, I don't know if it's appropriate, I guess is what I mean, for me to feel angry about it. But I do from the outside, because I just feel so performative. Like, people feel okay and give themselves a pat on the back. But anyways, this episode's not about that. But Hey, time for a quick break to thank today's sponsor. Today's episode is being sponsored by BetterHelp, the world's largest online counseling service. BetterHelp assesses your needs and matches you with your own licensed professional therapist. It is available worldwide, and you can access your account at any time. You can send a message to your counselor, or you can schedule your weekly sessions, again, all online. Plus, if you decide that your counselor isn't a good match for you, which happens, it is easy and, more importantly, free to switch counselors if you need to. BetterHelp is more affordable than traditional offline counseling, and there are lots of different kinds of therapists with different identities who work for them. There's even financial aid available, which I really like because this makes it a more accessible option for grad students, in addition to offering perhaps more diverse therapists or more therapy modalities than might be available in your area. To the handful of listeners who have used the affiliate link that I'm about to repeat to everyone listening, take this as a virtual hug from me to you. I am really proud of you, and I really hope that this is helping. As a Dear Grad Student listener, you can get 10% off your first month at betterhelp.com/deargradstudent. That's BETTERHELP. Again, the full link for 10% off your first month is betterhelp.com/deargradstudent. You can also find that link at the bottom of the episode description or on the support page of the podcast website, and it will take you right to that 10% off offer. Okay, back to your favorite podcast. I really appreciate what all of you have said and that you've hit different points on this. And so thinking about some of these experiences, and especially Tanisha, what you brought up about, like, I want to help another first year, or I want to help someone else early in the program. What are some ways that, or what are some things that did help you? Things that you told yourself, things that you reminded yourself. When I think about even what you said at the beginning, Zori, like, racism is ingrained in how academia fundamentally exists and functions. I feel like if anyone ever is just like, you just need just your self-care and you'll pull through, is like kind of an offensive thing to say, because it's not like this assignment's hard. It's like, oh, take a bath and breathe afterwards. We're talking about like who you are fundamentally and as an identity of a person is like erased and degraded in academia. Like, it's such a higher level. So what are some things that you do to cope with it or recover from the weight of it all?
Yeah, I think I can go first because there's a couple things that came to mind as you were talking. So the first thing was getting in community with other Black doctoral students, other Black grad students. And when I was about to transition into grad school, like, I made a post on Twitter. And I was like, I am looking for literally anybody who is Black in grad school. I do not care if you're in psychology. Like, I know community is so important to me and how I function. I was like, anybody who is doing anything in grad school who's Black, please just follow me. I'm looking for support. I'm going to St. Louis by myself. I'm moving by myself. I just need community. And so that was sort of one of my first things I did. And so seeking out community was something that was really important to me. And it kind of like waxed and waned. And so like in this last year in the pandemic, that has been very helpful, like working with other people on Zoom, working with other Black students. Also just recognizing that none of this is like a me thing. Like, I had to really put some distance in between like what was going on in my program and how I felt about myself, because there was times in my program where people said things that I don't think were meant to be insensitive, but how they landed on me impacted me and sort of like derailed a whole year for me with my whole mental health of like, maybe I'm not cut out for grad school. And so really putting distance in between my program sort of mess and myself, and knowing that like, I'm a good researcher. I wouldn't have gotten into grad school if I wasn't a good researcher. I'm a really, really good therapist. I would not be here. They would have pulled me out of the program at this point if I wasn't a good therapist. And I know what I'm doing, in the sense of like, I know some things of what I'm doing. And when I don't know, I can seek out help. And so for me, really honing in on that identity and being like, okay, this is me. Anything else is just mess. Like, anything else I don't really need to hold on to. I don't need to keep on with me. I can just, you know, remember that that's other people's stuff. And then I think the last thing was boundaries. I was really bad at it. I've been really bad at it, but I've gotten a little better in this last year, just being like, no, I can't do that. I can't be on every committee. I'm just one person. I can't be in all these leadership positions. I'm just one person. Like, I'll try. And I guess the consequences of that last year, I was so burnt out. But like, that came in at expense to me. And so I'm like, okay, right. Now we have to cut back. And that is what it is. And being okay with that and setting up boundaries for myself so that I can take care of myself, so I can watch movies or watch TV with my friends on Twitter, so I can play Animal Crossing all weekend, like so that I can do the things that fulfill me and be okay with, like, if school has to take a back seat for me to feel okay with myself, hey, that's okay too. And I think I was waiting for permission for somebody to tell me that was okay. When, like, if you need permission, this is your permission to do that. Like, take the weekend off, the work will still be there. And so really taking time and setting up boundaries for myself to be like, I need to be okay as Tanisha first, and then everything else is a bonus. Like, if I can't be me, like, if I can't be okay with myself, the work that I put out is going to be crap. I'm going to be a bad therapist. I'm not going to be able to do all the things that I want to do anyway. So putting myself first helps me do all the other things that come after that. Oh, that was a lot.
No. Oh my gosh. Are you kidding? At every word, I was like, yes, yes, yes. I feel like you actually just had me come up with, like, an entire psychological construct on what you just talked about, which is the most dramatic way I could put that. But a theme that I feel like was throughout everything you just said was, like, leaning in and leaning out. It's like leaning into the things that nurture, the things that fulfill you, right? Like playing Animal Crossing all weekend, leaning into community, and then, like, creating boundaries and creating distance and, like, leaning out of what you need to, I think is such – it's a good coping mechanism for all of grad school. And as you were talking about sort of specifically targeting it to areas of grad school related to, like, identity and, like, how that is intersecting with your identity is, like, I did not think that you said too much. I think that you said it all. And I feel like at one point I was like, you're the host and you need to snap into your podcasting right now. And like you really had me. So I thought that that was fantastic. And, like, it was even something I relate to.
Thanks.
Yeah. I mean, yes to everything that you were saying. I was like, she just took the words out of my mouth. Like, all
the whole thing, none of us have anything else to say.
That literally means Dory just sitting in silence, like, oh.
Yeah. Everyone was just nodding. It was like a music concert. We were all just nodding in unison, like, yes.
I mean, your first point, though, about community is so important, though. I think another line of my research, and I hate to tie everything back to my research, but
it's fine. Is
this kind of idea of collective and community care versus self-care, because self-care is very whitewashed and Eurocentric and has become trendy and, like, I don't know, something to, I guess, aspire to, these bubble baths and long runs that take up a lot of time and, I don't know, are just, like, very, like, not ideal.
I hate baths.
Yeah, but this idea of, like, collective care and community care, where you are leaning into community, where you're finding those more social and emotional supports, I think is really key for being able to handle graduate school, especially being Black in graduate school. And I think I found that through Black and mental health, because when we started it, you know, I was coming into graduate school. I didn't really know what to expect, but meeting you all, I was like, wow, okay, like, there's some community, even when I'm in North Carolina and everybody else is in New York in my program. And I was feeling so much distance, and studying politics while also trying to focus on my mental health was just a lot. So having that community was so key. And the other thing I would say that helps me is, like, yes, sort of this, like, lean in, lean out. I don't really know what to call it. I don't know,
but I was just like, oh, just, like, my soul started saying lean in and lean out. Yeah. I was like,
I mean,
yes.
I like that. I was, like, because dancing. I was thinking, like, attach, detach. I mean, you said lean in, lean out, and I was like, oh, okay, we're on the same page, whatever. Ooh. This is.
You, like, start seeing, like, stickers and stickers in my head.
Right? But it's this idea of, like, I pride myself on this, and I think that, like, we all do, is the fact that, like, we've let our experiences and our identities kind of contribute to the work that we do. Like, that's what motivates us and inspires us to make things better. But at the same time, like, it can become really taxing when it becomes, like, an obligation that we feel like we have to fill. And I think I've become, like, victim to John Henryism, like, trying to prove myself through my work. Has been really difficult for me. So now a friend recently told me, she's like, what is your why? Like, remember that why, that piece that really is your passion and your reason for doing things. So when I'm, like, trying to make decisions, especially academically, because, you know, it's the whole publish or perish culture. Success in academia looks like manuscripts and papers. It doesn't look like YouTube videos and, you know, me making goals and my running. But when I turn back to my why and if it's going to contribute to my why and what my passion is, then I feel more at peace with myself. So do I need to take these 18 credit hours, or do I need to, you know, take off something on my plate so I can replace it with something that's going to replenish me as a person? That has been tremendous in helping. Like, I don't need to join another committee because it's just more performative bullshit. Like, I don't need this to prove to anyone that I'm committed to helping other students of color. Like, I know that about myself. I don't need to be a slave to the system in order to prove that.
And I think it also speaks to this idea of, like, you have to serve yourself if you want to serve others. You have to be able to take care of yourself. Or it speaks even to what Tanisha said. I think everyone said at this point, at some point, you burn out and then you're serving no one. And you're just the one who's degrading away, because it's not affecting the system when we fail. If anything, it just feeds the system to be like, yes, more, you know? So I think that that's really important to say. And a few of you now have brought up the Black and mental health community and the organization that all of you work with. You know, Zori, I'm curious if you would want to speak on that a little bit, discuss what Black and mental health is, and if that has been an important part of your community and, like, what that's meant for you.
Yeah, so Black and Mental Health is an online initiative that Bree, Tanisha, and I, as well as a few other co-founders, created in 2020, right after everything that happened with George Floyd and Breonna Taylor. And it was created during this time where other Black people in academia and other fields were also creating their own groups as well. And I saw Black and Neural, Black and Bio, all these other things. And I was just like, where are the mental health people? Is there a Black in counselors, Black in psychologists? I'm not a psychologist, but I can sneak in. But we started Black in mental health because, again, with everything going around with the pandemic and just the social injustice that was happening, and also, you know, it was like one of those perfect storms because a lot more people were at home because of the pandemic. And a lot of people were just looking for things to do. I think because of that, a lot of the social tensions that were happening in the U.S. Were really being highlighted and really being focused. And I think we took that opportunity to be like, hey, this happens everywhere, even in academia, even in places where a lot of people, at least in my community, a lot in my Black community, think of higher education, getting all these degrees as like essentially moving on up. And what we're seeing a lot, and I draw in blank on like an actual source, but what we see is Black professors, Black academics actually don't make that much. I mean, academics in general don't make that much, but like especially academics of color, Black academics don't make that much despite all their credentials, despite all their degrees and stuff like that. And especially in mental health, you know, when Bree and Tanisha were talking about like their self-care and how they moved through grad school, I remember, because in counseling, you had to do a master's. And then if you just want to suffer a little bit more, then you can do a PhD. But I remember going to my master's thinking like, oh my gosh, I'm going to a counseling program. This is going to be full of empathetic people. They're going to get it. Even if they're white, they're going to get it. And sweet, sweet summer child.
Turns out America's everywhere.
Yeah. Right. And, you know, I think as we've all said before, there's these like systems of discrimination, of racism everywhere, even in mental health. I mean, when I took the counseling theories class in my master's program, all of the people that we learned about were Eurocentric, old white men, sometimes old white women, sometimes a little bit, but like, basically white. And honestly, it wasn't until maybe like my first or second year in my PhD program where I even learned that there were other psychological theories that focus on people of color that were created by people of color. I was just like, where was this? Like, why was I not being tested about this? You know, why was I still learning about Freud's, you know, it's all your mom's fault, you know, type of thing.
There's probably some like, there's some history in like Jewish history that probably explains Freud's problems that we won't get into. As a Jewish person, I can say that. But I just mean, it's also interesting as you bring this up, because it really does add another layer when we think about like the Black in movements online and thinking about mental health in Black students and just like in general with all that goes on systematically in academia, is that all of you are also Black therapists and Black counselors. And that adds another layer, I think, innately, based on what you were talking about, Bree, about when we talk about responsibility. because, and you tweeted about this, I think it was you, you like found a Black therapist and you're like, wow, it'd be so cool to go to that person. But that means I professionally can't work with that person. And so you're then both limited by therapist choices or supervisor and professional choices because of how few people are out there doing this. And when, I don't know if it was, I think this was your episode, Brie. Somebody went to a white therapist. This might have been Deja Clement now that I'm thinking about this. Somebody went to a white therapist and the white therapist like really thought that they were woke and like just messed up with race things over and over again to the point that like the person I was speaking to switched therapists. And it came down to something similar you said, Zori, where it was like they went to a counselor, right? Someone who was like big in like the empathy and like trying to be very with it and all of that. And yet, unknowingly so, portraying racial tropes. And I don't want to misquote myself. The episode I'm talking about is episode 23, if anyone wants to listen and I think hear the full real story of whatever I'm trying to quote here. But you're limited in who you can see for your mental health if you want to address Black mental health in a way that a white person can't. Like I have that limitation, and like I'm never going to act like I could do the same thing for a Black person that a Black therapist could. I couldn't. I don't have that shared experience, and not everyone needs that. But for the folks that do, like that's a limited resource. So I think all of you being Black therapists, while you're expanding that resource, like you're also experiencing the realities that you are expanding it, that there are few, that you are one of not enough. I don't know. I just like that came to mind as you were talking, Zori, and like that wasn't on the that wasn't on the outline, but here we are. I don't know. It just came up.
I mean, it's so relatable though, because there are so few of us. And that's why, I mean, Black and Health was so needed. Background. So Tanisha, you know, I watch your YouTube videos before even like knowing you and finding you on
Twitter. I love an academic crush.
And it wasn't until like I had to like DM Tanisha for something that I saw these like old messages I had sent her that was like, hi, I watch your YouTube videos. I'm such a big fan. I got my first interview.
Oh my God, I could literally cry. This is the cutest thing I've ever heard in my entire life.
It's a small world. And then, you know, right. One of my really good friends right now is like, oh, I know Zori. And I'm like, wait, what? I'm like, oh yeah, I know Zori very well. I'm like, oh yeah, of course you do. Because it's the smallest world ever. And when it comes to seeking services, that world gets way smaller. I sought out, you know, that wasn't my story about the white therapist, but I have another story about...
Yeah, it was Deja.
about a Black therapist where I started seeing this person shortly after beginning graduate school to kind of like deal with the stressors that I was having during the pandemic. Black woman, but we didn't connect. And like, it was really disappointing for me because I knew that the time and effort it would take to find another one was just like... It was such a daunting task that I still haven't found one because I just like, I don't want to go through that again.
Right.
So, and it's like, you know, Black people aren't monoliths. So it's like, yes, you can increase representation. Sure. But like, are we going to connect? Is there that there needs to be, I don't know where I'm going with this. It's just very frustrating. It speaks
to access to care.
Yeah.
But I mean, it speaks to access to care because if I think about, I mean, it's the same. I mean, like white people aren't monoliths. Like as a Jewish person, like I would love a Jewish therapist who like kind of gets that. But like if I don't connect with a therapist, my next options are easier to find and there are more to choose from than if you don't connect with a therapist. Like you said, like you're not a monolith. Like, you know, Jewish people aren't a monolith. I'm sure I could find somebody who has many views that oppose mine that I would be not interested in diving into. But when we think about access to care, like you've said, it's such a tax to try to find another Black therapist to connect with, to mentally prepare yourself to maybe not connect with that one, that it's like you just haven't even taken that step because it's so much. That step and all of that effort, it's still less for me. And I think that that is important to say when we think about access to care and we think about Black mental health. It's like not only is the system set up to put you in a place to feel all of these different points you brought up, but handling those different points, there's still lower access to those.
Yeah, I was going to add too, I think about that a lot where like it would be great if you connected with your first therapist. And oftentimes people don't connect with the first therapist that they find. And so then we're stuck in the same rut. Like it took the middle of my third year for me to find a Black counselor that I connected with that I could afford while being in grad school. You know, there was like all these horror stories about these places that were on our list of like mental health services. And like, so I would ask the older Black students, you're like, do not go here. Here's a problematic place. This person's racist. Oh. Like, I was like, okay, so now what? I'm told that we're supposed to be getting therapy as clinical psychologists. It used to be a part of our curriculum and they took it out for whatever reason. And so I know that I'm supposed to be doing this and I know I need it because grad school is hard as hell. And so now I'm stuck. And like, it just so happened that my advisor is a Black woman. She knows a Black woman who owns a practice, who had graduate students in her practice that I could afford to go to therapy. Otherwise, I would have been like shit out of luck looking for a therapist in St. Louis, which is like one of the most like racially diverse places in the world. But I'm like, okay, where are these Black therapists then? Because I only found her through another Black person. Had I not found her, like, I don't know what I would have done. Like, I would have been in the same like mousetrap of like trying to find somebody, calling, can I afford this with my stipend? Is insurance going to cover this? If it's not going to cover it, how much am I going to have to pay? And it's like almost like Bree was saying, it's like not worth it. Like, I don't want to keep doing this to find a therapist that I may or may not connect with. It's just like so shitty.
That's really shitty. And it's interesting, like, as you were saying that, I'm like, why are those therapists still on that list?
Well, because they're probably
the white students.
Yeah, they're probably really great for some students, just not all of us.
You said that so much better than I did.
Yeah.
Well, okay. So I wanted to spend a little bit of time. We've hit so many points about why this kind of episode is important. Some of the things that you all have gone through and ways that you have, leaned in and leaned out to help, you know, cope and work through that. I'm curious if anything has come to mind that you haven't said that is advice that you would want to direct to any current or incoming Black students. You know, I think something that I'm realizing is that not everyone who listens to my podcast comes from academic Twitter. And that means two things. One, they may not know that there's a fantastic community of Black academics, and especially, you know, a lot of people who listen are psychology students or counselor students. You know, they may not know that there is this like thriving online community if they were just referred to this episode on Reddit or somewhere else. So if there are folks who were like, they're like, wow, this exists, maybe you have something to say to them, or it is somebody from that Twitter community who's coming on here that you're like, I just want people to know XYZ. Are there things that have come up or like pieces of advice or wisdom that you would want to give to other students resonating with everything you all are saying?
I mean, so we've talked about this before, so this is more of an emphasis than...
I love emphases. Very good.
But we talked about having communities, and that kind of connects again to the mentorship piece that I've been talking about before. And so if there's other Black students who you feel comfortable with, because again, not all skin folk are kin folk, meaning that just because you share the same identity does not mean that you'll mesh well. As we talked about with the therapist.
Like that monolith concept that Brie brought.
But if you do find people in your program who you do mesh well with, like support each other, especially as Black students, especially as students of color, especially as queer students, because, you know, it's not just all about race. And I think that's where that kind of informal mentorship piece comes in, because you may all still be students, but you may be students in different places in the program, second year students versus fourth year students. I have a great group of friends. Well, my cohort is my friends, but in terms of like people who have similar identities, I have another group of friends in my program. We're all students of color. Whenever any scholarships or funding opportunities or anytime there's something that I'm like, you need to do this, I don't care what you think, you need to do this, we immediately always like text each other, we have a group chat. But then also, as you were saying, look for other opportunities to connect with people, not only in your program, but and not only in your field, but also outside of your field. And one of the easy way that we've all been able to do that is through academic Twitter. I think that's such a great place most of the time to connect with people who have been really helpful. I know that when I was working on an APA presentation for the first time, I had never done a poster presentation before. I had reached out to academic Twitter like, hey, I'm a doctoral student, never done this before, and my advisor's not answering any of her emails.
Classic.
How do I do a poster presentation? And I had all these people in my DMs like reach out to me saying like, oh, hey, like I can send you a draft, a template of how to do a poster. And I was able to do it. As far as I know, it looked good. I had another friend who had done a poster presentation look over it, but that was such a great opportunity to connect with people and people who I hadn't really met before through that experience and through other experiences through academic Twitter and even on Instagram too. And Instagram is also has its own, like, I don't know what you would call it. I get academic Instagram.
Yes, there's okay, there's a whole group of them. And I don't let me go down this rabbit hole, but I know that I could probably be into it more. Like, it's just so much easier on Twitter. I don't know if you all feel this way. Yes, we're nodding. Yes, we're Twitter yes. folks. Sorry, Instagrammers listening. It just takes so much work. And then you have to see my face. I'm like, it couldn't be me. Like, I can't.
It's like, I don't have makeup on. And then also my room is a mess because, you know, even though I'm a therapist, I'm still going through depression. So, like, I can't
take cleaning for five more followers could not be me.
But yeah, using those resources and like, also realizing that those are other examples of like informal mentorship that you can use, and realizing that even if you may be the only person in your program, that there is a community, like we've been saying, out there, people who have been experiencing similar things who can provide resources, and really using those resources. Because again, unfortunately, I think a lot of students from marginalized backgrounds don't realize what resources are out there in general, but especially for their field, for their program. So I'm hoping that some of them have, like you said, found this podcast and are listening to this and are taking notes down on academic Twitter.
People do. They take notes. They tell me.
Yay, that makes me happy. Because like, I feel like I've learned so much through academic Twitter that unfortunately, I think a lot of people, especially professors, and I say this as like, not only like white professors, but also like professors who've just been in academia for a long time, think that we already know. Like I was talking to one professor about something and I think it was about how to do some sort of analysis. And she's like, yeah, you need to do this analysis, blah, 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 blah. Good. And I was like, great. Awesome. Dear academic Twitter, how do I do this analysis? If it were just like, oh, yes, here's some resources. And I think that assumption that because you're in academia, because you're in grad school, whether it's master's or doctoral, that you know these things. I'm like, no. And this may be sound a little bit like imposter syndrome, but like, no, I know really well how to fake it to people who I don't want them to know that internally I'm like an anxious bundle of nerves, but that doesn't mean I know things. And there's just a lot of unspoken unknowns that academia expects you to know. So long story short, marginalized students, use these resources. Don't be afraid to show that you don't know these things, because one, you're probably answering questions for someone else who was not brave enough to do that themselves. And two, you realize like, yeah, the system's messed up. So
Like what Tanisha was saying, like, it's not on me that I feel shitty about XYZ. And you've actually reminded me of a tangent that, again, I'm not letting myself go down, but I will say the sentence about, which is that I really hope in the next 20, 30 years of my career, and I'm hoping it's academic, but we'll see where I land. I really hope that we move from this place of I'm here because I know things to I'm here because I have the capacity to know things. Mm-hmm. Hey, time for a quick break to thank today's sponsor. Today's episode is brought to you by Personal Finance for PhDs Tax Workshop. If you're a grad student who is a U.S. citizen studying in the U.S., feeling stressed out or confused by tax season, you are not alone and your stress is valid. Tax softwares and professional tax preppers don't always know how we are categorized or how to qualify all of our income. Now, this can lead to overpaying our taxes, which obviously we can't afford, or underpaying, which again, we can't afford. Plus, no one wants to deal with penalties from the IRS. Luckily, Dr. Emily Roberts of Personal Finance for PhDs has developed an affordable tax workshop to teach funded grad students how to prepare their annual tax returns without any of that stress. This tax workshop makes it easy to prepare your income and your higher education expense numbers correctly. There are even warnings for common mistakes that students make so that you can avoid them. With this workshop, you get 11 pre-recorded videos and 2 worksheets to work through at your own pace. Plus, your purchase also comes with an invitation to a live Q&A call with Emily for any questions or concerns you may have. And for any Q&A calls you miss, they're posted and you can watch them later. And the best part? You get all of that for under $30. Now, the tax return due date in the U.S. is April 18th, 2022. So if you are interested, now is definitely the time to sign up and just make your life easier. Think of it like preventative self-care. To purchase this workshop, you'll want to go to pfforphds.com/dgsreturn. That's pf forphds.com/DGS return. You can also find this link in the episode description. Okay, back to your favorite podcast.
Zori, when you're talking about like finding community, I think that is so important. I think we've all said it, like you said, join academic Twitter. But something else that I feel like you're hinting at is like just not being afraid to advocate for yourself. And I think that that was so difficult, and it still is very difficult for me. Like, I don't want to admit that I don't know something. I don't want to like put myself out there. And, you know, I love it when people do it to me and like, oh, I love this, you know, now I can support this person and now we can have a relationship. And like, I love that. But to get myself to reach out or myself to post that tweet or, you know, whatever, it's so nerve-wracking for me. So I would say like, you know, just not being afraid to self-advocate and really ask for the things that you want and go after the things that you want. I think that like this past semester for me was such an adjustment period. I was moving to a different city and trying to acclimate to being in like the second year, seeing clients for the first time, all that stuff. And it was just a lot. And on a personal note, was just coming off of some feedback I had gotten that wasn't great. And so just feeling like, do I belong in this program? Or like, it's maybe not. Maybe I should just put my head down and just like work and not say anything. And that did not serve me at all. I lost all my self-respect, my dignity, you know, who I am, which is to call things out and to raise hell, for a better word.
I love it.
But it was the worst feeling because I felt like I betrayed myself. So I would say like being able to advocate for yourself, knowing that you deserve the things that you're advocating for and that it's not a lot. So not being afraid to do those things is something that I'm still working on, but that I couldn't stress enough.
It takes a village to, I guess, grow a PhD student. And so really like leaning into that. Yeah. And I think surrounding yourself with people who inspire you. And so like Bree, I don't know if you've ever known this, but like you inspired me to be a hellraiser in my program. And like, I have like taken it on. Like you can ask anybody in my program. It has been a shit show because I'm like, nope, this is wrong. You're not supporting students of color this way. You think you're supporting them? No, you're not. You're causing stereotype threat in your students. This is not okay. And so like, I just want to say like, be a hellraiser like Bree. Let her inspire you to be.
Oh my God.
Okay. I think we should talk about that. The love story that's happened of like what? The DMs, right? Like,
I'm like,
from DMs to
my inspiration just said she's inspired by me.
anytime I do anything that's like scary, I'm like, what would Bree do?
Exactly. I'm like, oh, what would Bree do?
Look at your impact.
Oh my goodness. I'm going to continue sending these fiery emails to faculty. Wow. Thank you.
And I'll also send you a 30-second MP3 file of the last minute or so of this podcast. So you can, anytime you're feeling imposter syndrome, you can just replay Tanisha saying that over and over again.
I really will. It's my new intent. Thank you.
Or just like anytime a faculty member is like, are you sure? Just be like, oh, I'm, you know what? I'm so sorry. Let me just, I just need to play this back for you. Yes, I'm sure.
But yeah, I think finding people who like inspire you and people who know things that you don't know or people who like you can pour into, that has been really helpful for me. Like finding people who know a little bit of other things, like Venn diagramming our knowledge. So they're like, I know a little bit about racial discrimination. I don't know that much, but I know something there. And then if somebody knows something about statistics, because I am incompetent in statistics, I can have somebody there. And so finding that support and, you know, I think not being afraid to reach out, not being afraid to ask questions, because we've all been there. Like I've reached out, like I cold DM people all the time. And like, sometimes they answer, sometimes they don't. Like if you DM me, I probably will answer. It may take me a little bit, but I will answer. And so like making sure you find people on the internet or in real life that you can connect with has been like all the difference. And I think the last thing I wanted to say was, oh, that there's hidden curriculum in grad school. Like there are things that what Zori was saying of like professors believing that you should know when you come in. it's all bullshit. Like, you should come in ready to learn and that's it. Like, that's all you're there for. Like, you shouldn't be expected to come to grad school knowing everything. Otherwise, you wouldn't have to spend 5 years, 4 to 5 years of your life doing it. Like, you're there to learn and like lean into that, like ask questions. Even if you're afraid to ask questions in class, maybe go to the professor's office hours, ask your peers, like just know that like you not knowing things is okay. Like, you're learning and growing and that's okay too. And give yourself space and grace to learn how to be a grad student, to learn who you are. You're still growing up. Like, you never stop growing as a human. And so like grad school is just a portion of that time. And so really remembering that like grad school is a portion of who you are, not all of who you are. Exploring those other pieces as you're matriculating through your program is going to be important, because once you graduate, it's over. And then who are you? Like, if grad school is everything, if being a PhD student is everything, then what? Like, you're going to have to figure that out. And I think it would be worth your while to figure it out while you're in grad school, rather than like at the end, defend your dissertation. You're like, well, now what? I'm not a PhD student anymore. I'm a whole doctor. And now what? And so giving yourself space to grow as a human, give yourself permission to do that.
Yeah. And I think that really speaks to what Bree was saying, right? Like, she did figure that out, or is in the process of figuring that out before post, right? I mean, you are, you're aware of it, and you're already changing some behavior back to what is more aligned with you. So I would say that you're in the works of it, but I think that it's really important to point out. I also think, and you all don't know this, but the episode that comes out after yours is an episode I'm doing with PhD Balance. And we talk a lot about this burnout in this way of like, you know, something that I have on that outline. So like, spoiler alert, is just the fact that we don't need to sacrifice ourselves to our programs. We don't owe them our soul. We don't owe them anything, actually, other than, you know, we're giving them, I guess, our work and our time, but we don't need to die for our program. That does not benefit us in any way. So spoiler alert for the next episode. I didn't really realize I had 2 mental health episodes in a row, but I feel like the last year and a half warrants 2 in a row. So hair flip. Okay. With that being said, I've somewhat time managed, but against my wanting to, we have to move on to final thoughts and ending the episode, simply because we're running out of time and I'll never be able to edit this, and that'll be very sad. So Bree knows this, but for anyone listening, or for Tanisha or Zori, if you don't know, final thoughts are like wrapping up the episode. It's like, what takeaways from everything that we have talked about do you want people to remember? So maybe a little bit different than what we just emphasized, but just wrapping it all together, you know, tying it up with a little bow. You know, as I mentioned, Zori, people take notes. So if someone has pages and pages now of everything they talked about and they're like, what the heck was all of this? They went in so many directions because Alana can't direct conversation. What do you want them to remember?
I mean, just the first things that come to mind is being Black in grad school is hard. Like, it's insanely difficult. And what stuck out to me the most was both Zori and Tanisha saying, like, you're not crazy. Like, this really is difficult, and not having kind of an expectation of what graduate school should look like for you. And that can be for anybody, but specifically for students of color. Like, it is so difficult given the sociopolitical context as well that we're going through, having that validation that, you know, even me sitting in, let's say, this Zoom space,
we're in a room
with 2 Black graduate students that I look up to so much, and hearing them talk about their struggles and just kind of being able to commiserate like the Black graduate student experience has been so validating. And so I would just want listeners to take away, especially those who are Black or students of color, that like, you're not alone in this. If you can find a therapist, I'm still working on that. I know it's really difficult. And Tanisha brought up the whole like funding issue and not being able to pay for one. That is incredibly hard. And I know there are resources out there for more affordable therapy options. So, you know, being willing to explore those as well. And finally, if you aren't Black or you're not a student of color, just to listen. I think that listening to this episode is very important, and it's just a starting ground. Listening to other students of color, listening to other Black graduate students about their experiences and about what they want and what they deserve is crucial.
I want to piggyback on that just for a quick moment. Earlier in the episode, I said that there was a podcast about being Black in grad school that is by a Black woman. The podcast is called Black in Grad School. I don't know if you all are familiar with it. I follow her on all social media. She's much better at Instagram than I am, but I highly recommend this podcast. You know, this episode is a small snippet. This is, I can never fill those shoes. I'm not attempting to. But if there are other directions, there's a lot of Black academic YouTubers. You are three of them. Finding those sources, I think, I just wanted to add on, is really important. And that is another podcast that I cannot highly recommend to other folks. More highly recommend. I can highly, you know, okay. Who wants to go next?
I think what I would say is, like, I want the Black graduate students from this episode to remember and to just give themselves grace. Like Bree said, it's really hard. And it's not hard in the sense of like the work is challenging. Like, you're going to be challenged intellectually, but like all the other shit with it, like, it's like one thing to be intellectually challenged, but then like all the peripheral stuff that comes along with just being Black in grad school makes it very hard. And I think that give yourself grace in that and find people that you feel comfortable talking to that about, because like, I cannot tell you how many times, like, me and Zori have talked about like setting boundaries, saying no to things. Like, you need people in your corner to help you do that, because you're not going to be able to do it all yourself. And so giving yourself grace and finding people in your corner who can be like, well, Tanisha, I think you're doing a little too much right now. I think you need to say no to this. Or, hey, I really think you should apply to this thing. Or, I really think this is a good opportunity for your channel. Like, you should talk about this on your channel. Finding those people who are like in graduate school, or maybe not, like, just finding people to be that support system that you may or may not have the time to do yourself. Like, you won't be able to like do it all. And so finding grace for yourself of like, yes, I cannot do it all. And finding those people who can help you do the things that you can't do on your own. Oh, wait. And I wanted to say to the white students, I also agree with Bree, like, finding space to listen, and just remember that, like, the way, oh gosh, I'm going to say that stupid saying, like, the ways in which, I don't think that thing, but I'm going to say it, like, the ways in which, like, your experience in grad school is like your experience. And I don't think, like, some of the students, like, even in my own program, I always have to say, like, that's your experience. And just because you're having a good experience doesn't mean that this experience for me isn't hard. Just because, like, I'm grinning and bearing it and it looks like I'm doing it effortlessly doesn't mean it's not hard. And I think understanding that and listening and being okay and sitting in the fact that, like, you could be having this great, happy, hunky-dory experience, you're killing it, thriving, and also, like, there's people in your program who are not doing that, and being okay with that, like, not trying to convince them that, oh no, it's not that bad, that professor isn't racist, he didn't mean it that way, not doing that, just being like, okay, my peer had a racist experience, my peer is having a hard time, and that's okay, how can I support them in that hard time, instead of trying to be like, oh, let me just put a band-aid on your broken bone. Like, no, that's not what you need to do. You need to really hear them, hear their experience, and understand that it's hard, even if they don't tell you that it's hard. And so maybe going about it in the way of like, how can I support you, even if you don't tell me that you're having a hard time?
And listen when people say, there's nothing that I need from you right now. Like, don't do that white savior thing where you're like, well, let me do something anyways, because it'll make me feel better about helping you. It's like,
exactly.
I see a lot of that. And then I started to stop white people. I'm just like, no, they said no. Stop. But anyways.
Yeah. Please stop.
Zori, what about you?
I mean, I feel like I'm just, again, re-emphasizing everything that's already been said, but find community, find mentorship, both formal and informal. Advocate for yourself. I know that it's really hard. It's really scary, especially if you're, again, by yourself. But sometimes you're going to have to be the only one. And I know that sounds like really sucky, but especially if, you know, being in academia, whether it's research, teaching, whatever, is something that you feel called to, you need to get in the practice of understanding that self-care, like we said before, is not only getting your nail done and bubble baths and stuff, but advocating, stating verbally your needs, stating them loudly, stating them forcefully until someone is listening. Like, what you need to succeed. And sometimes that's with your advisor, sometimes that's with other students. In my case, I was writing a letter to faculty in my program and getting another letter back. But anyway, you know, really advocating for yourself, even when it's scary, even when it's alone. And to students who don't identify as Black students or students of color, before you respond to anything, either verbally, via text, via social media, via Black Square, you know, putting that out there, pause, and feel where that discomfort is, because even maybe even listening to this podcast, some people may feel some discomfort, even though for me as a Black woman, this conversation has been like a one on the level of racism related conversations that we've had. But take that moment to pause and feel where that discomfort is and understand where that need to take action is coming from. Is it coming from that discomfort? Or is it coming from, as you said, like, you know, this person, you've have created a relationship with this person, and you're truly trying to help this person in injustices that you're witnessing happening, which could be anything from microaggressions to, you know, something more scarier. Microaggressions are scary.
But I know, I knew what you
say
meant.
That they aren't. Yeah. But like really just sitting in that discomfort, and that sounds like such a therapeutic thing to say, but
you're in a safe space for that here.
But I guess speaking from my own experiences, as you were saying, you know, when people are like, no, let me be this white savior, especially in the last few years, especially with like George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, I feel like Bree and Tanisha probably experienced something similar. I got a lot of text messages and Instagram DMs and saying like, oh my gosh, the world is so horrible, you know, from well-meaning white people. And that's not helpful. And I understand that people want to help, especially when these things are happening. And for some of those people, these are new things that they're hearing about. For whatever reason, it's not my place to judge why they're just hearing about that. I'm just happy that they are hearing about these things, right, and they are wanting to learn more. But realizing that sometimes in order to help your friends, help your colleagues, is learning to when you need to take a step in and help them, step in and help them, or take a step back and either let them lead or let them tell you what they need, or just give them space.
I like to think about like what, like who and what your action is serving, right? Because I think a lot of people, a lot of white people, from my experience as a white person, will do things because it makes them feel better about their own racist actions. And they're like, I'm helping Black people because it's making me less racist. It's like, you're almost there. Like, you really want to help, but maybe just like pause and think about who your action is serving. Like, I think it's similar to what you're speaking to from what it sounds like.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was just like a part, I guess, knowing that there's multiple people, not just Black students listening to this, that I thought to bring in and connect. And also, I feel like it's really important to say, especially in regards to like, if we're talking about race, because that's part of the topic for this conversation, it's not just white people, it's other people of color as well. And I really want to highlight that as well, because I've also witnessed other people of color who are not Black pat themselves on the back, which, you know,
You know, we talk about the isolation of being a Black graduate student. And I want to say that, like, if you are feeling isolated, like you might be one of one in your program, but in the grand scheme of academic folks that are Black, like, you're not alone. And I really hope that you don't feel alone. And I hope that you find community either online, maybe it's outside of academia, like in your community, maybe you start volunteering somewhere where there's other Black people. And I just, you know, I remember feeling so alone my first year, even though there was another Black student in my program, like we, like the way our program set up, we weren't seeing each other. And so like, I felt so alone, and I want Black graduate students to not feel that way, because it sucked. It was such a dark time. Like, I was grinning and bearing it, but it sucked. Like, I would not wish that on my worst enemy, because it was so hard. And so I hope that like this episode inspires you to like reach out. I mean, I don't want to talk for Zuri or Bree, but like, reach out to me if you're feeling alone, reach out to other people on academic Twitter who are Black. And like, yeah, I just want to say, like, you're not alone. And if you're alone in your program and you need support, like, reach out, because there's support there. There are Black doc students, there are Black grad students who are ready and willing to support you if you need it.
I love that point. That was going to be my takeaway, was just that, like, you're not alone. I think it's so great. I've had a couple different people talk on the podcast, on whether it be like a Hispanic community on academic Twitter, Black community on academic Twitter, lots of different groups are supporting each other there. And it just reminds me every time, like, I hope that the Twitter space is a place we're seeing change that will also come into the true academic space. Like, I hope that this is just like a progressive place that eventually will blend and bleed into everything else, because some of the things that I see on there, I mean, I see real change, right? I see real people affected and improving, just like all of you have talked about how much that has helped. The other one that I had, the other final thought that I had was thinking about what and who your action is serving. And I think something for me, thinking about the piece you brought in, Dory, about discomfort, people are so uncomfortable with being uncomfortable. And that's like a normal human reaction. Again, like I'm going to get very therapist-y with it, and I will not apologize, as my podcast. but people get so uncomfortable with it that they can't sit with it. And so they act on it, right? And we see this with mental health. Like, I mean, you could think about like you had a stressful day. So like you go and you like get a giant Chipotle burrito, right? Like I can't sit with this discomfort, so I'm going to eat something and I'll feel better, which like I do all the time. I had an entire bag of chips today. Like it happens to the best of us. When it comes to racism, it seems to hit really deep because people have this idea that like it's 2020, it's 2021, it's 2022. I can't be a racist person because I have all these values and beliefs at the forefront of my mind, which means that nothing that I do, you know, unconsciously or consciously could possibly be racist. And that's just not true. And facing that for people, potentially having offended people, it's hard for people to sit with. And I think that the biggest pieces of growth for me have been sitting with the discomfort, accepting that as a white person, I consciously or unconsciously function and benefit from the system of racism, and being conscious of how I can change my actions going forward and apologize when necessary. But again, I don't really think that I have a lot of conscious racist actions, but that doesn't mean I haven't been racist. I don't need to necessarily apologize. What I need to do is change my actions and just try to be as cognizant of, as possible about it and listen. So that has been my own personal journey with it. And that might look different for different people. It also doesn't mean that I'm correct, but I just recommend to people practice being comfortable with the discomfort, because otherwise the thing that's making you uncomfortable will continue to make you uncomfortable. So that's just basic psychology on that sense. But I don't know, that's just been my thing. So not to get meta, I'll reel us back here down to earth.
Just in thinking that it made me think of, so one of our co-founders, Minnie J. Garcia, they're awesome. And also Dr. Broderick Sawyer, another co-founder, they work, I think Broderick runs the Racial Trauma Center. And one of the things that they do is embodying anti-racist allyship, which is a workshop for non-Black allies. So definitely recommend looking
into
them.
I'll link that in the description.
Yeah, if you're a non-Black person and you want to learn how to be, I don't like using ally as a noun, how to ally yourself better. That is one resource that you can use. And it's safe space for non-Black people to process with other non-Black people. Cool. So just wanted to
I will definitely link that in the description. I appreciate that as a resource because I think there are a lot of well-meaning people out there who just don't know what to do with all the well-meaningness. And I feel like I've heard stories time and time again about, yeah, all of you just made a face. So I'm going to say that that's true. But we are way, I thought I was going to time manage and we did our best, but we're way over time. So I'm going to wrap us up and take us to social media shout outs and where people can find you all online, especially after we've talked so much about community and, again, dare I say, leaning in and leaning out. So we can go in any order, but where can folks find you online and connect with you after hearing this absolutely fantastic episode with you all?
I guess I'll go first. I'm Tanisha. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at t.renee. So t.dotrenae. Forgot how to spell my name.
It happens
for a second.
More often than you would realize. People have had to re-record and send me files. Anyways, keep going.
And then my I'm on YouTube. I was on a little bit of a break, but there'll be new episodes soon at Renee's Corner. So R-E-N-A-E apostrophe S corner on YouTube. And then yeah, I think that's everywhere. Oh, and if you're not already following Black and Mental Health, please follow us too on Twitter and Instagram.
What's the handle? I think it's Black in MH.
Yes, Black in MH.
Zori, want to go next? Where can people find and connect with you online?
Yeah, so they can find me on Twitter at Zori Amber, all one word. You can find me on Instagram at Amber Insights. I also have a YouTube, Amber Insights, that's on hiatus. Don't know when I'll be back, probably after I finish this beast of a dissertation. Right. But if you're interested in learning more about different mental health fields and also just the struggles of being a grad student, you can find some videos already there.
All right, Bree, take us home. Bring us home. Rounding third base.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at Brianna A. Baker. Also my website, www.briannaabaker.com. You can try and find me on Instagram, but chances are I'm not logged in at Becoming Dr. Baker. And I'm also on YouTube at Becoming Dr. Baker, but little break right now. So feel free to watch.
I love this. Everyone's on hiatus. It's great. But you guys, you all have so many videos. So there's, if people have not seen your YouTube channel before, there's a lot to catch up on. So by the time they catch up, everyone will be back from their hiatus. You see how that, it's all fine. Everything's fine. Well, wow. Thank all of you, all three of you. Thank you so much for coming on this podcast. Again, bringing lived experience and bringing, I want to say expertise, because I think as therapists, we sort of have this like next level understanding of like, I don't know, people, which it helps me understand myself, which makes me think it probably helped you understand yourselves a little bit and processing all of this. So just thank you so much for bringing this to the podcast.
Yeah, thank you for having us.
You're so welcome. You're all invited again. I said this to Bree. We made it happen. So I'm sure it's not the last time, as long as anyone wants to come back. Well, Brianna, Tanisha, and Zori, thank you all for the millionth time for being a guest. Listeners, thank you for continuing to listen to the podcast that I started during quarantine, and I will talk to you all next week. Hashtag bye. You can connect with Dear Grad Student on Twitter at Dear Grad Student, on Instagram at Dear Grad Student Pod, and on Facebook at Dear Grad Student. Everything that you need for the podcast can be found on the podcast website at deargradstudent.com. If you're looking for merch, you can go to the website, click merch in the menu at the top, or look me up on Redbubble. If you just want to listen to me ramble online, you can find me on Twitter at Alana_Gloger. That's ELANA_GLOGER. And of course, everything for this podcast is made possible by the amazing podcast patrons. If you want to help out, you can join them at patreon.com/deargradstudent for $1, $3, $5, or $10 a month. If you want to help out the podcast in other ways, you can leave a review. Best place for that is Apple Podcasts, Podchaser, or Google Podcasts. Be sure that you are following Dear Grad Student on Apple Podcasts and Spotify and wherever you find your other favorite shows to be sure that you are notified when each episode goes live. As a reminder, all resources and links mentioned in today's episode can be found in the description. And until next time, warmest regards, best wishes, sincerely, Alana.